extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Wow, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, presented by AT&T 5G. I'm Andrew Weeby with my partners in soccer, Matt Doyle, Kalen Carr, David Goss. It's the Monday crew, as always, on the ones and twos, producing Anders. He's getting his due. You got to love it. Coming up today from the AT&T 5G virtual studios, week two in the books. Charlotte FC's home opener in the books. We'll see how much Dave remembers from a rip-roaring day around the Queen City. Austin, 10 goals scored, 2 wins, but we're here to harsh the vibe because, well, you know why. The opponents aren't that great. Lewis Morgan and the Red Bulls are now the leaseholders at BMO Field. We got a great match to finish the weekend on Sunday between LAFC and the Portland Timbers. And some folks are wondering whether Carlos Vela should really get the bag after he came off at halftime. Everything else under the microscope. We got CCL coming up midweek. We'll talk through those matches, and in the mailbag, I swear we are going to get this golden boot draft in. I will do everything in my power. I will ignore buzzers. I will hurry you through games so that we can get 5 more rounds of the golden boot draft. All right, let's go. Before we talk about all the joyous things that happened this weekend, and less all the things on the field, off the field that get us excited, it's hard to be a soccer fan, a sports fan, a person in this region right now and not have some thoughts. Have some concern and have some horror, to be honest, about what happened in Mexico and Querétaro this weekend between a match against Querétaro and Atlas. I mean, people are dead. People are hurt. People are trying to figure out where they go from here. And I just want to say that we're thinking about all those folks. We're thinking about everybody in Mexican soccer that's dealing with this, that's trying to figure out how they feel, where they should go from here. And we just want to say that it's not acceptable. I mean, that's the obvious, right? And I've seen violent things happen in stadiums all over the world. I've seen them happen in North America, in our part of North America. I've seen them happen in Central America, in Mexico. This is not some, oh, it only happens there thing, although maybe this is an extreme. We all have a responsibility, I think, to keep violence, to keep things that would harm each other out of our stadiums, out of our game, out of our society in general. This isn't just a sports thing, in my opinion. So our thoughts go to those affected by the violence in Mexico. Just awful stuff. So, yeah, I guess there's no way to really transition this, but let's do it. The best thing you saw in week two, and we will start with you, David Goss, because you saw a lot more than we did in Charlotte. Give me the day, like the rundown here. You don't have to, you know, don't have to be like the Dave Chappelle, like we had 2 beers here, and then we, you know, like we went here and we had shots with these guys, and they were like, yo, what's up? Like, give me a little
2 hamburgers, bro. Yeah, like,
give me the rundown.
It was great. I flew down Saturday morning, landed. I have a friend who lives in Charlotte, so she picked us up and took us around and showed us sort of the city. And it was like one of those, I obviously coming from New York, but it felt like that first spring day vibe. So I was like, everyone's out. Everyone's like, I'm going to wear as little as possible because I'm pretending it's the summer. And the one thing you notice in the city is everyone owns Charlotte FC stuff, which is wild because then they also broke the record for jerseys sold in a stadium at the game. Mm. But you walk around, and it's not like, oh, that guy's going to wear a Liverpool jersey to the game. You know, she's wearing an Arsenal jersey. It's like everyone had Charlotte FC gear on, and we went like further from the stadium, and everyone was sort of primed for the game and primed for the moment. And you see, you know, street murals in places and spray painted crowns on the ground and all this stuff. And so it really was like an event over the course of the day. And there was a ton of energy to it. We went to a classic soccer bar there right early in the morning, and some people came up and said hi. So I appreciate that from everyone. And everyone was sort of getting into it with the Premier League games and the Serie A games and all that. And then from that, I'd say that afternoon on, everyone was just talking Charlotte FC and at all the different breweries and at the tailgate and everything, getting ready for it. Atlanta fans were getting booed outside of breweries. You know, it had all the vibes. It had everything you wanted, and it felt like a big event. And I said this on the MLS Today show that we did, but I came into MLS at Red Bull, going to Red Bull games at Giant Stadium and Revs games at Gillette. And it did not feel like the same as those two experiences when you walked in. And I heard that Fox FS1 talked about that a little bit on their broadcast, and I think Alexi was bringing it up, of how the league has changed, and saw Stu hold it on social media. But you walk in, and it's like, I got tickets in the upper deck because I wanted to sort of like take in that whole atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
And we walked in, and it was
upper deck tickets because it's the best view. Like, got to get the atmosphere. It's a vantage point. Like, I'm so used to watching games at ground, like field level, that
people. You decided to step out of the suite for this one.
Exactly.
Just went at halftime. Just went at halftime.
I walked up to the stadium and I took off my tux, James Bond style, and underneath I had normie clothes on.
Mm.
But you get up there and it was already packed. That was 20, 25 minutes before the game. Like, it was already full. Everyone in the building, everyone ready sort of for what was going to happen. And I think you saw that with the anthem of like, there wasn't like the mic cuts off and someone starts singing and then other people follow. It was like everyone at the same moment heard the mic cut, was like, I know the words, and everyone just started singing at the same time, and it was so loud, and it was awesome.
Intentional mic cut or sneaky mic cut? What do you think? I'm a cynic, so I see special made for TV moments like that, and I'm like, could you engineer that? Could that be something
narratives,
that you
the narratives?
Just saying, I'm just throwing out the possibilities here. What was the crowd like in game?
I think people were engaged, people were excited. It was obviously the way it played out, sort of like urging every half moment. I think Ben Bender's brother was sitting next to me because I've never heard anyone shout, put Ben Bender in more times my entire life at any sporting event. But everyone was super engaged. Everyone was locked in. And as I said, everyone felt like it was like for Charlotte FC. It wasn't, hey, what is this? I'm curious what it looks like. I'll go and just be there. It was people who wanted Charlotte FC to win. The supporters section, I think it's one of those things where they'll sing and then you still have to sort of figure out how the rest of the stadium will react and sort of get engaged with them and all of that. But the crowd, everyone was watching. Everyone had their phones out to start to like take video of everything that was going on. And then everyone was sort of on every kick from the first moment on until Ephra.
Yeah, I would say there was one kick in particular that they were maybe not watching with as much joy. Efra Alvarez, he will be our 2220 player of the weekend because he had an absolute golazo for the winner. Galaxy.
Except me.
6 points.
Everyone would have thought I was his dad because everyone was like, this guy's super pumped about this one guy's goal. And I'm like, yes, I've been watching this since FC Dallas, GA Cup, Toyota Soccer Park, and he is here now. Let's go, Efra.
There was another moment from this game, Kalen, that made the rounds, and I'm not as cynical about this one, I don't think.
No.
Sasha Kljestan and Chris Haggard, I mean, this is an incredible story.
Yeah, they did a good job of telling it on the broadcast, and it was something, too, that Sasha, I think it just kind of came out the day. He put out a tweet, I think, the day before the match.
Yeah, something like that.
So it was kind of like one of those things where I think like the whole match was kind of centered around this record, right, and the amount of crowd that was happening, but this story was the one that I think really caught everybody's heart, really, because it was such a great story. For those that haven't heard it, it was Sasha. I think when he was playing, maybe was it in LA for
it was Chivas? With Chivas, yeah.
Okay, so I think it was like one of his early years or rookie years in MLS, and he went to go visit a children's hospital, and he met Chris Haggard there, who was a young cancer patient at, I think, LA Children's Hospital or Children's Hospital of LA. So there's like this cool photo of him. And a lot of our listeners probably have seen the story. If you watched the match, you would have seen it. But it was incredible. And so now to see him play, Chris playing for Charlotte, who, by the way, I picked as, I think, in our draft preseason, I picked as my new, it was like college player of the year. Or it was,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I took him and player. I think Ben Bender, because I think I doubled down on both of them. So I was actually Goss. I was that guy in the crowd yelling at Ben Bender.
It was wild. Like Chris Haggard, when he was 8 years old, he was diagnosed with liver cancer. And it was like, it was bad. He had to have a liver transplant. And he was, you know, and Sasha said it, like, you know, Sasha's such a great guy. He's one of those dudes who goes to visit, you know, sick kids in hospitals. And he's like, sometimes, you know, you hear from the parents, sometimes you never hear from the parents again. Sometimes you hear and the worst has happened. And he is like, for not only the worst to be avoided, but for this kid to have gone, you know, he's a Sounders Academy kid. He played really well at Georgetown for a couple of years. And now, as you said, Kalen, he's, you know, potentially the college player of the year from
he's Kalen Carr's ETR college player of the year. preseason pick.
I think we can, like, I'm going to go in a different direction, but I think we can all agree that was the best thing we all saw this weekend. Something that gives you a little bit of hope and faith in science and humanity.
It was the best parts of humanity.
Yeah.
The parts that that I think we can all universally understand and appreciate and get the emotions flowing a little bit for good reasons. So congratulations to Chris Haggart for just getting here, man. Now we'll see what he does. He's got Kalen Carr's vote of approval, so he should go a long way.
The staff in Charlotte really like him, and I think he does have a big role to play for them this year. So it's not just a great story. I think he's going to be able to be a really good pro. And Sasha also for it's crazy. I mean, like, Sasha's being around for so long and being in MLS, like, to see that kind of come to fruition even is like a testament to what a good pro Sasha is. And I think the thing that stood out most was he said, like, just the moral was just to be a good person. And I think Sasha's like definitely one of the best people we have in our game. So it was cool to see both of them come together and trade kits after the match on the pitch.
Yeah, I also really love that the picture that Sasha put out is, you remember that the hairdo, like the kind of side spiky, like pushed down gel spike in the front and the back? Like, you see the different eras of Sasha Kleshin, in that sense. So that was cool. Doyle, what's your best thing you saw in week two?
It's more what I heard. It was a great week for F-bombs. the replay of the Elite Sporting Kansas City goal, Tudiane, they caught one of the all-time great F-bombs from I assume was a Sporting Kansas City fan or maybe staff. So that's one. And then to top it off, or finish it off, MLS After Dark last night after Mamadou Fall scored a late equalizer for LAFC. You could see him celebrating. And then also at the final whistle. So first of all, like I can read lips a little bit and I recognize he definitely dropped an F-bomb. But then according to Michele from Tudiane, who was watching as well, he's like, yeah, you could also see, it was very clear. He said it in Spanish. He said it in Italian. He said it, I mean, he's Senegalese. So obviously he said it in French.
Say it every way you can, man. Why go one way when you can say it six ways?
I didn't know whether it was celebratory or anger, frustration, whatever, but either way, it was the kid's really good. It was a hell of a goal. It was a hell of a performance from him for lots of reasons. That's the best thing I saw this weekend in MLS.
You know, you're 11, 12 years old, I don't know if it was this way for you guys, but like on the way home from school, that's where we got our cursing upbringing. We learned how to curse. Mamadou Fall is just head and shoulders above as far as his potential.
He's elite
on that
already at 19 years old.
He's there, man.
Doing it in five languages.
That,
it's like the Pope.
That goes into Weeby Best 11. He's Midwestern.
Exactly. Yeah, for sure. If you see his heat
we
map.
We learned to curse from our parents at home because we're New Yorkers. So it was never a secret.
All right. My best thing I saw in week two, RSL supporters booing Albert Rusnak. This was the proper way to welcome a guy back like who, though he gave you 5 years.
Starting up with like the happiest stories, and now it's like,
this is happy. This is happy. RSL fans, this man left. He signed a free agent contract with the team that you are competing against in the playoffs potentially every year. Like, yes, boo him. I was reading your column, Doyle, and I was struck by it when I was going back in highlights. I was like, it's so strange that they had a big welcome party for Albert Rusnak. Like, you can just let the fans do it when his name gets called or he touches the ball.
So,
like,
this wasn't Javier Morales coming back.
So that's the thing. That's where it's weird, right? If let's be real, if Wando had left San Jose this year and was on another team and he came back, we wouldn't think.
Rusnak is not Wando.
Agreed. So the concept by itself is not ridiculous.
No,
it was the choice they execute. Yes.
Absolutely, absolutely. Okay. And you know what? If Wando had not retired, if he had instead signed with Seattle as a free agent, then maybe Seattle would have scored a goal this year.
Oh, maybe they'd have a point.
Maybe. Yeah.
A certain producer on this show tried to bury Sounders RSL at the very bottom of the rundown. Put in the quick ones.
This
rapid
is a
fire.
ETR. It's just an 11-minute show because Anders is about to cut the record there.
Well, the group chat has been awfully loud so far from Anders. All right, let's get into our bespoke segments here. And the first one that we've forgotten about in week one, but we cannot forget again, is what did Sky Sports ask Kalen about on Monday morning? Let's all make a guess. Let's make a guess here. Phil Neville and Inter Miami getting whomped. That's got to be there.
That's high on the list.
That was high?
That's evergreen. Yeah, go ahead.
I had Shaqiri possibly in here with his home debut.
He was on Sky Sports, actually. He was the undercard.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow.
Okay. He was the undercard.
Right after you get through that Kalen Carr segment, then you get right to Shaqiri. I'm going to say Charlotte got in there just for the crowd shots for 75K.
Definitely.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And I'm going to guess the last one was Kerryon Gibbs.
They just brought it back to Miami. They're like, well, we forgot about Kerryon. Like, we got to go back to that one.
I'm trying to remember. Yeah, it was definitely Jesse Marsh. Jesse Marsh at Leeds.
That should have been more obvious to us.
Yep.
Ted Lasso himself.
They asked about the huddle.
That is wild. I didn't know that was a thing until like 45 minutes ago. Man, you really have to try sometimes.
Yeah.
People
find the stupidest thing to care about.
There's your Sky Sports Monday morning. Darrell, what's your biggest week two takeaway? Give us something to chew on here before we jump into the nitty gritty.
Just the gap between the teams that are clearly ready, like have come out of the gate real strong, and the ones that haven't, and you know who you are. It feels like it's not a gap. It's like a chasm this year. And so like usually earlier in the year, games are pretty scrappy. You're talking a lot of 1-0s, and there were a few of those to be fair. But like this has not been that for 2 weeks. So it looks like there's a, you know, 7-8 teams that really know what they're about right from the jump. And if you're lucky, you get two of them meeting early in the season and you get a game like last night's LAFC Portland game, which was a banger. That game was awesome. So getting to see that, like, it's been fun, but it's like there are already a half dozen teams that I'm like incredibly worried about, and we're two games into a 34 game season.
Let's start on that note then. You know who you are, and if you know who you are, you've played Austin FC in Austin so far in 2022. Austin, 10 goals scored. Handled the business against Cincinnati, and then Inter Miami came to town and got absolutely buried on Sunday afternoon. Our lead story basically is, are Austin for real? Anybody feel strongly about whether or not they're for real and whether folks like me are just big Debbie Downers for bringing up the quality of competition when talking about said 6 points? I will just say that when I saw the schedule this year, I thought, wow, Austin FC ought to send a fruit basket to MLS HQ and the schedule makers, because
that's
to
like
go
the
cross
most vicious. That's the most vicious thing that anybody has said about Cincinnati or Miami on the show thus far this year.
Not even.
Come on, man.
To go cross your conference after last year when there were barely any cross conference games, to have the first two games of your season at home against those teams, one team that's won 3 straight spoons in a row and didn't really make many key signings in the offseason other than new head coach, and another team that did the biggest teardown in MLS history. Those are gifts. Like, and if you don't rip those gifts open like it's Christmas morning and celebrate like Austin did, rightfully so, you're screwing up. So congratulations. This is awesome. Sebastian Driussi, wonderful player. Like, had he been there from the jump last year, this might be a different team. Had Inter Miami decided to sign him instead of chasing Roger Martinez for 6 months and getting nothing out of it, maybe they would be a different team. But again, congratulations. But are Austin for real? Anybody think this is an indication that they are indeed for real? Is this a longer-term sign?
So just for starters, I'll throw out there, I don't think they're going to average 5 goals a game this season. That's just me trying to come up with the facts.
Coward instincts.
off the rip. I think that there's a reason to have – I think there's a reason as an Austin fan to take the confidence that they're getting in the attack. That is a good sign for the way this season will play out. But I need to see the next 2 weeks to see how those center backs hold up against actual opponents who are going to attack you. Because I thought they gave up chances against Cincinnati and Miami sort of rolled over for them in this second game. So I guess what I'm saying is no, but there are things I am taking from this that I think have value going forward, especially a guy like Cecilio Dominguez, who it was just a terrible first year for him. And now he's confident, he's happy, it's fun, it's easy. And I think the rest of that attack, it's a lot of guys where we have seen how much confidence means when it comes to goal scoring, when it comes to finishing, when it comes to being those creative players in MLS. And I think now they all have it in that group going into what will be a tougher stretch.
I can't believe that David Goss, of all people, he of the David Goss theorem, doesn't want to get behind this Austin FC team. The whole team is the David Goss theorem.
You got to protect the theorem, though. I can't get ripped on this one.
Wow. See, Austin's man's guarantee before the staff. You think I'm slow playing you right now? Dave won't even give his namesake theorem to your club.
That's how you know he's gotten big time.
Disrespect.
I am more positive about this team. And like, I guess when we say for real, it's like, to me, that means, is this a team that can for real challenge to make the playoffs? Because I think like it was at, they were at the bottom of the table, right? Or like right, I think my Dynamo or maybe one.
Bottom adjacent.
Below. Yeah. but now I actually think this team can challenge for those spots. And yes, I know the competition, but I also don't know if what you're saying is true about, these are gimmies. We've seen a lot of teams have trouble.
I'm not saying they're gimmies. I'm saying they're bonus games. I'm saying you get to start the season against arguably the two worst teams in the league that are not in your conference.
Right. Favorable. Yes.
So there's no pressure on those games.
To be clear,
really.
You called them gifts. You called them gifts. That was the word you chose.
They feel pretty gifty right now. I'm not going to lie. Like, it, you know, like,
yeah,
they feel as close to gifts as you can have in this league at this moment.
That's other fair. Than Charlotte. I think that's fair based on their form. But I think this team, the way that they look, though, is like much more dynamic. I think Drewcy is, you know, sort of the centerpiece of it. But then when you have like Ring and Pereira behind him, like that's a really nice midfield three. Cecilio Dominguez, I think, we're seeing a big boost in confidence for him. I think even from a managerial perspective, like just having time with the team and like preaching patience and now having a little bit more, some more weapons or guys just even settled in. Then they went out and got some like at least some reinforcements as well to kind of help out. And so I think this team, you ride that confidence and that wave. But I think if they can carry that, at least that home form forward, like they didn't just beat teams like 2-0, right? They like really stepped on them and just like kept throttling all the way down to the very end, which I think is a really good sign. And for a team that's like still searching for confidence or identity or who they are, just seeing the ball hit the back of the net that many times is going to help you really kind of believe in a project. And so I think they're off to a really good start. I mean, obviously they're off to a record-breaking start, but like I don't think that it's necessarily I think they can make a push towards the playoff spots especially if they carry this form at home.
I completely agree, by the way. For awesome fans that are out there like, you hater, like just get off. I completely agree. I'm just saying, like specifically, here's some questions I have. Is it going to be Jete? Is it going to be Aruti so far? We haven't seen, I mean, Aruti's movement, very good, opens up the game for Driussi and Dominguez and also for Fagundes, who's been good so far. And then the center back.
And he actually passed the ball. That is a big one for Maxi Aruti. He's not picking his head up from 35 yards and just shooting every time. Please continue.
Yeah, but when you got the bow and arrow, man, you want to bring the bow and arrow out. Like you got to, if you don't shoot from deep, you can't bring out the bow and arrow after goals. And then the center back pairing.
And every weekend, Maxi's jumping on, watching MLS highlights on MLSsoccer.com or MLS YouTube page, and he's seeing Omer Fernandez with the bow and arrow, and he's going to start getting jealous and start ripping shots.
That's not right. Don't take a man's celebration. Hey, look, the center backs to me are the question, and we haven't seen Cincinnati test them a little bit, and their finishing wasn't good enough, and that's why they didn't score. And Inter-Miami didn't. But these are two teams that were ready to fold. Like, when you put a goal on them in 2 minutes in, when you put two goals in 4 minutes in the 22nd and 26th on Inter-Miami, they were prepared to fold. And congratulations for Austin for doing what they were supposed to do. And as you said, just stepping on them. I'm just going to wait and see a little bit before I decide, yeah, for real. This is a big, clear indication of what they'll be full season. But it's an absolutely awesome, like, early sign of what could be and where this team might be at the end. I do think that they're playoff competitive. There's no doubt about that. Given the level of talent they had, we had said that before.
There's some doubt about that. Hold on.
Well, the center backs. Again, the center backs. Yeah. That's the
center backs and defensive midfield.
So Portland, Seattle are next.
Pereira's a nice little player. If it's him sitting as a single pivot behind Ring and Giriusi, who are both really good players, but like Alex Ring has been freed from the D-mid shackles that he had to wear in New York for a couple of years, and now he's just out there living that YOLO life. Like he is not the player he was 2 years ago, and that's fine. But like I don't think Danny Pereira can do that job solo against good teams. So they need Johan Valencia to be really good, and they need those center backs to be really good. And like I like what I've seen of Kip Keller thus far. I thought, you know, Cascante looks a lot better through two games than he ever has before in MLS. Neither of those guys can really run. They still have like a flagrant lack of speed in central defense. So there are, I think it's more likely than not that they will be in the playoff race. But I think it's, you're rushing things if you're guaranteeing that. If you're saying there's no doubt they'll be in the playoff race, you're rushing it, Weeby. There's a reason you call these games gifts.
They are gifts. At Portland, home against Seattle, at San Jose, home against Minnesota, at DC, home against Vancouver over the next six. Let's let those six play out, and we'll have a larger sample size.
Weeby will weigh in 29 games into the season. Then he will feel comfortable.
Once I know what you are, I'll be right there to tell you.
But I'm out here. I'm going to get ripped for anything I put out there, a guarantee, and Weeby's hiding behind the wall.
Speaking of, are we to the Charlotte two-point guarantee yet? Or, oh, no, that's down the rundown. We'll get there in a little bit here. That's about 10 minutes. Chris Wellhausen asked us from Austin to do at least 10 minutes on Austin FC to honor their 10 goals. I expect we're pretty close on that front. Other for real or not for real teams, how about the Red Bulls? That was a tough home opener at BMO for Toronto FC. About as patchy as that pitch. Just Lewis Morgan show. He should have had 4 goals.
Yeah.
He might have been onside on the one that was taken away.
Did you guys go over that one on instant replay? Because about any officiating decisions until I see.
No, we didn't. I have nothing to say about that. That's what we call the mercy rule on instant replay. If a team's getting worked by 3 or more goals, we don't go back and check to see if the team should have been worked by more. We just let that thing kind of move on into the past. What do you think of the Red Bulls so far? 6 points, plus 5 goal differential, San Jose first, now Toronto. It's working. What Gerhard Struber wants to work seems to be working, Doyle. At least that's what your column told me.
Yeah, no, unquestionably through 2 games, it's working. The defense still looks good. It's not as dominant as it was down the stretch last year. I think they're figuring out their shape a little bit. And Dylan Nealis is, you know, he's maybe not a lockdown defender at right back. And Frankie Amaya has been really good through 2 games. But if he's playing that Sean Davis role and his rotations aren't, you know, quite as crisp as you expect from a guy who has been starting for that team for 100 years before moving on. So like there are little things to pick at like that, but the defense is still very good. And what's changed is that they're just so much faster to get numbers into the attack. And it's not all coming from long balls. If you watch the Red Bulls play the final half season last year, they were still doing Red Bull things, except the only way that they progressed the ball was by just punting it up to the forwards and trying to win a second ball and going from there. That is still part of what they're doing. But if you watch those first 2 goals against Toronto, like that was a energy drink soccer clinic. That was exactly how Ralf Rangnick drew it up a dozen years ago, or more than that, really, when you know, he really sort of codified how high pressing teams want to play, and they were able to just eviscerate this Toronto team. And the interesting thing from a sort of a Red Bull global point of view is that they did it playing out of a 4-4-2 or the 4-2-2-2, which was the original, the OG sort of formation that Red Bull teams played under well, he for him it was when he was at Hoffenheim, but then when he came to Red Bull in 2015 as their global director, like he wanted all the teams to play a 4-2-2-2. And Jesse Marsh tried it. Chris Armas tried it. Bradley Carnell tried it. Gerhard Struber tried it last year. It didn't really work for any of them. And it worked so well in this game because anytime there was a turnover in midfield, whether the ball was, you know, falling to Amaya or Drew Yearwood, there were always immediately 2 vertical threats. Right, so that first pass is going forward every time. Michael Bradley is just far too slow to either scramble or to even get pressure to the ball in the first place, and it was off to the races. And the, you know, the center backs, when that happens, the center backs are now, and really the whole back line, are busy trying to deal with two forwards coming right up the gut, and that allows Lewis Morgan to sneak unmarked to the top of the box. And, you know, those two finishes were excellent. But, like, it was stunning how scripted this game was from, like, a this is how Red Bull have always wanted to play type of point of view. And it's a great – it's a super positive data point. This team scored 7 goals in 2 games. They have multiple goals in each of their first 2 games of 2022. In their last 20 games of 2021, they scored multiple goals twice. So, like, you know, Patrick Lamela is obviously a Gauss theorem guy. Frankie Amaya looking comfortable in central mid, and then Lewis Morgan doing what he's done. It's all clicking after 2 games. But I also think all the caveats that you offered about Austin apply here as well.
Yeah, here's the Debbie Downer. They started the year. Here's the Debbie Downer. They started the year at San Jose, who are committed to ignoring what any other team is doing and just making their own thing up on the field. And then they come into Toronto, who played, not only did they play exactly into their hands with their attempts to try and play through their press, to push the fullbacks high up the field, to leave Michael Bradley exposed by himself, to put Osorio and Pozuelo on the field together. They also right now don't look like a good team at those things that they attempted to do. So it's like a combination of both. And Doyle talked about Lewis Morgan getting in open spaces. Yeah, you also have Jaquil Marshall-Ruddy, who's played that position at a pro level once in his life, trying to operate with Shane O'Neill to pass off Morgan to figure out who's following him, who's marking. And the one thing with that formation, the 4-2-2-2, that often is why people don't use it, is because the center mids can find the ball in between the lines coming off the center backs. And that was not the case at all for Toronto. And they pushed Osorio and Pozuelo so far high on the buildouts that Michael Bradley was kind of left by himself with no connections, no one to link up to. And so the caveat in this is they may have played the two best opponents they could have started out the year with, who are so locked into their own ideas that they didn't react or even sort of build in a way to beat Red Bull specific. But they took advantage, and it's to the Austin convo, goal scoring is confidence. And this is another team with a lot of young guys. If Omir Fernandez has this level, Klamala, Lewis Morgan, these are players who need to see that so that they can believe in themselves. And you still have Luquinhos, who hasn't even debuted yet as a DP acquisition. And it feels like from what we saw on Saturday, Ashley Fletcher will probably slot in to that Tom Barlow role if he does, when he does get here and become a part of this group. And so that's even more danger potentially coming, and Tom Edwards as well.
Any concern for Toronto? Well, I should rephrase. How much concern for Toronto?
It looked like, you know how Doyle was talking at the beginning, I think his first point was on some teams looking like they were ready to play and other teams looking like they were completely underprepared. It looked like that up to a T to me, which was kind of funny because Red Bull, I think Struber had come out and said before that they were in trouble and needed signings and needed help and like, were like, you know.
Like, hey, to tamp down expectations, like, hey, we'll talk playoffs here in a while. Yeah.
But the system is actually clicking, and they were much further, like, they know who they are. You can tell who they are. And like, even some of the connections in the pieces between, I think Klamala had 3 assists to Lewis. Yeah. So it's like the way those two are even combining is working. And then actually, like, Toronto looked kind of like San Jose in a way, where they were like constantly getting isolated 1v1 and losing those duels. And even on the set piece, they go up on a set piece and send, I think, 9 guys forward. And it's just a complete sprint the other direction.
But they left a 17-year-old back to cover everything just in case.
I mean, that was like, I was watching that and I was like, is this San Jose? Because that's the what I've seen them do over and over again, where you take those kind of crazy risks. And maybe they were trying to push and get into it. So I think this team will sort it out, but it's kind of like caught in between two minds right now of like, are they going to be more of a possession-based team? Are they going to be... like, how are they going to defend? What's their best formation? How they do set pieces? It's like, it was all over the place. So, and Red Bull is like the worst team to play when you're going, when you're like searching for who you are and you don't quite have everything figured out, because you know exactly what they're going to do. But yeah, Doyle, I thought it was a great point on the, like, it wasn't long balls. Like, they were just picking them apart, like passing easily through the midfield. and breaking lines like at will. So it was really impressive from Red Bull's perspective.
We've talked about talent for 8 years with Toronto, but mainly the last 3-4 years of like, well, will talent win out? Will talent be this? They can't play all of those players on the field together. Like, it's not possible for them to be a successful team and have everyone on the field that we think should be a starter in MLS. It felt that way coming out of last year. It felt that way in the offseason, and it feels that way now. And I don't know when someone that works with the group acknowledges that and attempts to do something about it and says, you know what? Maybe Osorio Pozuelo and Michael Bradley in 2022 are not a winning central midfield pairing to be able to compete against teams. The Red Bulls come in with what, 2 22-year-olds in central midfield that are ready to run for 90 minutes at and high press and be all over the field. And you don't even have Insigne yet, where you could say, well, push Osorio to the wing, bring in, I guess, Ralph Priso or Nobel Akello and try and like help Michael a little bit, because let's be real, Michael's not coming out of this team. But then Insigne shows up and I don't know what you do with all of them anyway.
I don't know. That last point's going to be an interesting one for Bob to wrestle with, and for Michael to wrestle with too, is what exactly is his role on this team? Because there is turnover happening here. There is sort of a reckoning of like, what are we right now? What are we going to be? What are we going to be when Insigne shows up? Are we going to have the, you know, are we going to have the structure? Are we going to have the players? Are we going to have the, any momentum to build on that signing on the field in the middle?
Okay. Let me ask you this question. Alejandro Pozuelo for Keegan Rosenberry, straight up. Who says no first?
Well, you know, honestly, I guess Austin Trusty.
Kalen loves it. Kalen's here for it.
Yeah, I don't know, man. That's a hard one. That's a hard one. Tough for Toronto and their opener at home. Got to go back to the drawing board a little bit. Cincinnati's still at the drawing board. 1-0 losers at home. DC United with a PK goal way late, like 95th minute late. This is what Ola Kamara does. It's also what DC do. Doyle, you've made this point, and it's been sort of ongoing. We've joked about it with Ola over time. Like, they're 11 for 12 in Hernan Losada's era of PKs, and they've given up two. So this is a strategy that's worked for them before. But our friend Brandon Barlow hit us up and said, guys, all I want is well hope is for you guys. So we're not guaranteed to say this, I guess, is for you guys to think that for the first time in 3 years, FC Cincinnati looked like an actual professional team yesterday. That's it. LOL. We actually showed progress finally. And hopefully, big hope, it continues. Did Cincy show progress?
I'll say they keep putting some.
Yeah, they keep putting up. Like, I don't think the attacking side's not terrible right now.
I mean,
Brandon Vasquez had a borderline goal.
They have no goals through two games.
Yeah, but it's not. Okay, look, but some teams have no goals through two games and they have less than a goal XG over that time. Cincinnati is actually creating chances. They just either aren't finishing them or like Vasquez's goal, it got taken off the board for an offside call. That was borderline. I won't do IR on here.
They do look like a better team to me, or at least they did in this game, than they did through most of the previous three seasons.
Brandon, if that doesn't sound hopeful, I don't know what does, man. You got to just be brimming with hope. Your cup runneth over. But David hit us up, and gentlemen, in the 80th minute of FC Cincinnati versus DC United, Moses Nyman received a red card via review, which means Nyman has currently earned more red cards too at TQL Stadium than FC Cincinnati has wins at TQL Stadium. The fact that this stat is even possible blows my mind. Also, will the David Goss theorem apply for Ray Gattis next season? Is coming back from retirement equal to a player entering the league for the first time? If not, then will Cincinnati ever have a chance at being, not spoon winners, basically? Does the David Goss theorem apply to Ray Gattis?
I have too much respect for Ray and what he's done for the game in this country and for in his career to even bring this topic up. He is a saint for just coming back and being a part of this FC Cincinnati team. And I'm leaving it at that. Also, I'm the Charlotte guy and Weeby's over here talking about the great attacking team that has zero goals this season.
What?
Get out of here.
Hey, man. Look at the expected goals, all right? Go look at the expected goals. There's so many XG, just a lot of XG. All right, I teased it. It's that time, Dave. 2 points. Just needed 2 points. First two games for Charlotte FC. We're not able to get it. Had a wonderful evening, a wonderful day, an opening to remember forever. But LA Galaxy and EFRA got the 1-0 win. Had a lot of chances created in that match. Did the Galaxy. Yeah. Where you stand on the state of Charlotte right now, as you see it on the field?
Listen, man, you know, it, behind FC Cincinnati's just roarous attack. They're one of the most dangerous in the league on the no goals scored impressive attack teams.
Actually, Cincinnati has one goal. So.
Nice. Yeah, yeah. Good point. No, they don't. They lost 5-0.
Was it 5-0?
And then they lost 1-0.
Yeah, it felt like they scored a goal.
No, that's Miami scored.
That's how many XG they had. It just felt like they scored.
No, I mean, I'd say in the attack, it doesn't seem fluid. You don't have a ton of players who individually have their own ideas, so it has to come through the system. And it feels like, especially the pass before the pass, it's really slow. It's holding on, whether it's not sure where runners are or it's not being comfortable in the system and knowing that next pass, which I think they do an okay job of playing out of the back with it. It doesn't seem, you know, no, it's not dangerous right now. It's not cohesive. Swiadowski was obviously gone for 2+ weeks and then comes back. And I don't think he's that type of player. He's a guy who needs service. So I don't think that fixes it alone. But as I've said a couple of times, they're aware of that, right? They tried to bring in Maciej. They tried to bring in this Polish winger who now looks like he is coming in. It's not that they think the attack's where it should be. It's just how can you manage that as you're still waiting for players to come in, and how can you remain competitive? It would be interesting to see maybe some shifts in central midfield for some other personnel. But in general, it just felt like every time they entered a dangerous area, it was slow. It was the wrong decision. It was waiting for runners to catch up rather than playing into space and being able to attack.
Kamil Jozwiak is that winger at Derby County right now. Been there for about 2 years, 23-year-old Polish international. So they're sticking in Poland with some of these big-name signings. Swiderski, obviously international with Poland as well. His stats in the championship don't exactly jump off the board as far as goals and assists. But we'll reserve some judgment. Let him get the signing done. Don't want to curse him before it, you know, literally or figuratively curse them before that actually gets over the line. So TBD. But our 22 under 22 player of the weekend presented by Body Armor is none other than Efra Alvarez, Kalen. That is a banger. Mm. That is a hell of a goal. That is a 19-year-old shushing a crowd of 75,000. That is all the things that I like about MLS.
Yeah, I'm so used to seeing him on the right-hand side as well, too. So I was like, huh, maybe we try him on the left here. He took, like, it was such an incredible strike. And I think the game was kind of like missing that moment of quality where, like, Chicharito had a number of chances, but more like, I would say probably more like half chances, maybe three quarter chances. And wasn't, you know, maybe on a better day, he's sharper and able to get one of those, but it was just kind of like the game was kind of searching. And even for Charlotte, they had like the one cross to Reyna that where he kind of like, you know, doesn't get the header right. Swiderski for me was not very dangerous. Like he didn't seem very dynamic. He would, and look, he didn't have a lot of service, like you said. So it was, the game was kind of like calling for a moment, and then Efra stepped up and just like it was one of the best goals I've seen. Like that's especially for I think we've seen him actually score some pretty nice ones in the past, but this one was just like picture perfect up into the upper corner. So I was kind of feeling like if you're a Charlotte fan, I was like, oh, is it worse to show up and get a 0-0 draw? Or is it better to get, see like an incredible goal in person, even if you suffer at the loss? I know they'll probably take the 0-0, but I was like, I don't know. It gave the game as if for a neutral, at least it gave the game like that kind of cherry on top of like, you get the excellent crowd and all that kind of fun stuff, but then you get that moment. And for LA, if you look at it too, like another clean sheet, right? And two in a row now. So being able to kind of do win it, we talked about, can they win in different ways? And I think that was a kind of another step or another sort of indicator that this is a team that doesn't necessarily need to try and win every game 3-2 or two, three goals to get 3 points. Like they can win games 1-0. If they need to as well.
Cameron Johnson hit us up on Twitter. Projected 22 under 22 winner. I'm curious, Doyle, where you think Efra will end up and who would be your favorite right now to be the 22 under 22 for 2022? Number one.
Yeah, no, it's tough. Efra has the talent to end up, you know, in the top five, maybe even higher than that. He's still only 19 years old. He's been around forever, so it feels like he's older than that. And for all these years that he's been around, you've heard whispers, and sometimes it's been much louder than whispers, that he's just not a professional. He doesn't take care of himself off the field. He's not fit. He could only do really one or two things. When he gets on the field, teams take advantage of him. And that's why he didn't play much, really, the past 4 years. And stopped hearing those whispers this offseason. In fact, we heard the complete opposite, that like he looks reborn. He looks fit. He started taking himself seriously, taking the game seriously, taking his talent seriously. And to the point where like there were guys on that team who were saying that like, maybe he should be in the 11, perform like this, and he will be in the 11. And if he's in the 11, then I mean, he could end up there. Mamadou Fall could end up there. Certainly Gaga Slonina could end up there, because he's got two shutouts in two games. He's talking about how he wants to set the single season record for shutouts, which is, I think, 16 or so. And like, obviously if he gets that, go ahead.
No, I was going to add Talis Magno, I think is probably so far this season high on that list as well.
Talis Magno. I mean, look, Jesus Ferreira has not scored in two games, but he has been at the heart of a Dallas attack that has consistently created chances. And if we should have learned anything from Tati Castellanos' underlying numbers last year, it's like you trust that to come good. And look, he's a DP. He's a starter. He's 2,222 eligible. All that stuff matters. So there's a handful of guys. I don't think that there is one clear this guy's gonna win it favorite like there was a few years ago with Alphonso Davies, and that's good in a lot of ways.
Even Pepe wasn't a shoo-in until he started scoring bags of goals last year. It wasn't like he was like, hey, enter the season, it's gonna be Pepe.
Right,
that happened over the course of the campaign.
Only extra time was telling you that.
Only David Goss was on the fields in Frisco years ago to predict that.
There's a lot of ways that this could go, and that makes it kind of fun. And my hope is that one of these guys steps up and takes their opportunity and has the type of season where it's like, this is as great as X, Y, and Z were. This is the only choice. And Efra Alvarez has the type of talent to have that type of season. And if he's the start, if he ends up as the starting number 10 for the LA Galaxy and they get back into the playoffs and they end up on 55, 60 points, which is plausible for this team, then we'll be talking about him at or near the top of this list by the end of the year.
And Mamadou Fall was a good call as well.
Yeah.
Throw that out there.
Yeah, he definitely was. Andrew Farrell called it on MLS Day, and he's been taking his victory lap over the course of the last 10 hours about that one. But I like one of the things I like about what the Galaxy did in midfield, obviously bringing in Marky Delgado, who could have helped a little for TFC this weekend. But
just Mark Delgado. He doesn't want the Y. Mark Delgado, and he's been awesome through two games.
I respect that. That's a man name. That's a man move. I respect that. But I like that. Obviously, Greg Vanney has a ton of trust in Victor Vasquez. There is a minutes limit to what you're going to use Victor Vasquez for. I like the way they're handling this, which is there is an opening for you to get time for Efra coming into the year, but we don't need you to be a part of it. And I think that gives him space to fight for a spot and earn a spot without handing it to him, but with also not going out and getting an international DP who covers him and gives him no opportunity. I really like the way they've gone about this. And my hope is that it does work out for them, and that, as Doyle said, he is a guy who can start for them and be consistent. Because if he can do consistent things off the ball, if he can be in the right spot, the talent's unquestionable. And that's why he's been on the under-22 lists without performing in the past.
He was 12 last year.
Right, yeah. Because you just can't watch him play soccer and not vote for him. And yet all the other guys around him are already putting in performances at MLS level. And so now if he can do those things, he can shoot up that list.
One of the best games of the weekend, speaking of Mamadou Fall, LAFC 1, Portland 1, Fall with a late goal. Portland were up off another Jimmy Chara. Not a bicycle kick for all the, pedants that are in my mentions here. Not a bicycle kick. No, it's an overhead kick. Come on, guys. We really got to define this. I probably would normally be one of those. But Jimmy Chara only knows how to go over the top of his head in some way to score goals. What a beautiful one for him. And then Mamadou Fall. But at halftime, the big news in the match was Carlos Vela didn't come back out of the locker room. OM Griff says, if Vela continues his run of bad luck with injuries, should LAFC reconsider giving him another bag? Kalen, We talked about how interesting the timing of his contract expiration is.
Kalen's in crisis.
What have you now? I mean, no. After a game he scores three goals, it's really easy to be like, give this man a 2-year deal. Like, let's go right now. Pony it up.
No, I think this is insane. Last week we were literally talking about Carlos Vela setting his own economy, like him doing, like creating his own currency, creating his own CBA, doing everything. And we were all saying, give it to him. And now he comes off at halftime and we're coming back the next week like, oh, should we just, it might be smarter to just kind of like let this walk away. Like, no, he came off at halftime. We don't know how serious the injury is. But from my perspective, like if Carlos Vela wants to play for your club and you are able to make that type of signing, you make it. You make that 10 out of 10 times. And like, yeah, he hasn't had the health over the past year.
Two years.
He sometimes looked a little bit disinterested, but who else in the league can do what he did the week before, and who would bet against him doing it, you know, a week or two from now again? So I would say, we get crazy, you know, we're going all in on all these like early seasons and we're trying to see who's going to be traded, who's not going to be picked up or pick up their option. And I'm just like, hey, pump the brakes. He's, you know, dealt with some injuries in the past. He had to come off cautionary or otherwise. But I'm not selling my Carlos Vela for LAFC stock right now.
So if it was me running LAFC, my dream scenario would be to extend him to the end of this season and not make another decision past that, and try and get him to play out at a championship level, which he has said he's committed to, while he's playing for another contract with his next team and not be tied to him to the future. But as long as you make the signing...
You couldn't get Kalen Carr to sign that contract. No chance.
In July, he's got to play for someone. So if it's not for LAFC, then he's going to Europe and getting that contract. And when is he getting that deal done? And what's that deal based off of? Because if he's hurt now and he doesn't play for the next month or whatever it is, and we don't know yet, it was precautionary. Steve Trundle says he thinks it looks okay. I don't know what it is. Then he needs something to platform him into what will be his final deal probably of his career. Now, I will say, though, for LAFC, as long as you acknowledge that you're willing to get out of it, I don't think it's the worst thing to give him this contract. Because every MLS team gets one buyout. We saw how TFC handle it with Jozy Altidore. Now TFC have put them in a bigger hole where they needed it for someone else. If LAFC can build their team in the right way to say, this is a risk. This is a risk that's okay based off the way the rest of our roster is built. And it's a risk that we are willing to get out of if we have to. Then I can understand Kalen's point being, when he's on, he's on. And where else are you getting a talent like that? And you sort of ride that risk, but you can't tie your club's entire future to his health.
We shall see. We got to keep it moving here to get the Golden Boot draft, and God knows I'm not letting that bounce off anymore. Colorado, Atlanta. No, just get your picks ready. Don't slow play us, Doyle. I know you're prepared. Colorado. We all talked about where's the number nine? Well, Atlanta comes to town. Elevation's a wonderful thing for the Rapids, and so is Diego Rubio, Jonathan Lewis, and Andre Shinichiki scoring.
Like, we had that wonderful LAFC Portland game last night, and because we're extra time, we spent 95% of our time covering it talking about Carlos Vela's contract.
give me the wonder. We had mentioned the wonder previously.
We're moving on. Weeby, come on. Where are we talking about now?
You hit Colorado, rewind. To
Colorado
hit fast forward.
Colorado versus Atlanta. Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, we just say, look, this is the Rapids way, right? For all the time you want to spend, and we just did it on Carlos Vela, talking about what they need, what they should do, what they're missing. They have a deep and talented roster that may not have DPs that when it's clicking and when the false nine with Diego Rubio works, and sometimes it works like gangbusters, they beat teams like Atlanta 3-0 at home. Yeah. This is still a playoff team, regardless of what happened in CCL, regardless of what happened at LA with Carlos Vela when they were heartbroken off that exit. This is more in line with what this team is going to be this year. Although I will still say that goal scoring remains a little bit of a dice roll. You don't know that this is going to happen every game. You don't know that Diego Rubio is going to play like this. That's the Diego Rubio way, or Lewis, or Shinichiki, or Barrios. But I'd say 65% of the time, somebody will come through and they'll get a good result. Worked pretty well for him last year, right? How about RSL Sounders?
Like Sounders have one win in their last 11 games across all competitions going back to last year. And now granted that's year over year. So there's, you know, it you don't want to read too much into it, but the Sounders brought back 18 of their top 20 players from last year in terms of minutes. So there's a lot of continuity year over year. There's not a lot of continuity on the field though.
Yeah.
And you can kind of explain it away with this one because the squad was so heavily rotated. Freddie Montero starting up top, Reed Baker-Whiting, or is it Whiting-Baker? The 16-year-old getting on the field is kind of an attacking midfielder. You know, Christian Roldan didn't start, which is once in a blue moon type of thing. But I am starting to get mildly concerned about Seattle's ability to use the ball to create high level chances, because they haven't done it in a long time now, save for that second leg blowout of Motagua. And they have, look, they have CCL coming up this week again, and they have to win their home game. You don't advance in CCL if you don't win your home game by a significant margin. And they haven't been doing that. They, you know, this was RSL being a much better team than Seattle. And that is no longer a super rare occurrence with the way the Sounders have been playing really since early October.
We talked about the booing, and I just wonder if Albert Rusnak, had they won, if he would have had a Kyrie moment. But no, they didn't win, so we didn't get that moment from the days.
Kyrie didn't win either, by the way.
No, that's true. That's a different perspective than Kyrie.
They dragged him into a high screen, and Tatum put him in the blender time and time again. Abused him.
We've already heard about this offline. How about this? New England Revolution 1, FC Dallas 0. PK in this one, Carlos Hill, PK's good enough, 1-0. Dallas had chances. We'll get to Jesus Ferrer in a second, but Bruce passed Siggy Schmidt on the all-time regular season wins list. I'm curious how many of the top 10 you guys can name off the top of your heads.
Peter Vermees.
Yeah, Bruce and Siggy. So you have the top two. Peter Vermees is 4 with 173.
Bob.
Bob is 3, 182 regular season wins.
Dom.
I think Dom.
Dom is 5, 170.
Frank Gallup.
So got
6, 130. We're going well, Per. Here, you're doing good.
Schmetzer's got to be up there.
Schmetzer is 15 with 84.
Oh, Steve
is Vanny on there?
Steve Nicholas 10 with 112. Greg Vanny is 12. He's almost there. 102. He just passed the century mark. So we're
is
still missing.
Ben Olsen on there for longevity?
Ben Olsen is 9.
Oh,
113.
My God.
113. Yes. So we're missing Jeez. 6 and 7 and 8. You guys have cleaned up the rest of this list pretty well.
Six,
let's see, 6, 7, and 8. One of them is an active head coach in the league currently. One of them is an active assistant coach
Jason
in
Christ?
The league. Jason Christ is 8, 121.
So there's another one that who's an active head coach.
Correct.
That we're missing. Jim Curtin?
Jim Curtin is close. Jim Curtin is 13th with 99. He's on the brink of a century mark.
Oscar Perea?
Oscar Pareja is the current head coach, number 7. And the other is Frank Yallop with 130
I already said
wins.
Frank Yallop.
Did you? I missed that. Yeah. But he did pretty well, I thought, guys. Well done.
Yeah. It's well like done. We know this league slightly.
Yeah, just a fun one for people at home to try to think about it together. Isma Bakura said, how long do we need to be worried about Jesus Ferreira as a finisher?
We just kind of had the conversation, right?
Yeah.
Like the underlying numbers are there. Our good friend Joe Lowry just put out a really good clip on his Twitter feed illustrating how Ferreira's movement off the ball can open up opportunities that there aren't a lot of other strikers that do. I lean towards trusting him in the long haul. Even though I don't love false nines, to be clear, I do not like. I am, as a U.S. national team fan, I am worried about him leading the line in these World Cup qualifiers in a couple of weeks.
All right, wait and see. Rapid fire time: Minnesota, Nashville. Kalen, you called this one. It was a 1-1 draw with weather delay. By the way, there was a 2-hour snow delay and an orange ball in that RSL Seattle match as well. What'd you see from Minnesota, Nashville?
Well, didn't I smash the over on Nashville draws this year? I think
you did. I think you stuck with the Nashville draw.
I wasn't
narrative.
Expecting it to be things that they were games they were winning on the road that they couldn't hold on to late because of set piece defending. So that was frustrating. You know, I still feel like they've had a great start to their road trip, going to Seattle, getting that win, and then taking the lead in kind of a difficult match, kind of scrappy one in Minnesota. Really nice goal that Dax plays the long ball. I think Hani hits it back across to CJ. But then, yeah, the set piece again is just like we've talked about this ad nauseum over last year and in the playoffs, and just the fact that they just cannot defend set pieces. This one, they just kind of all drop back into a flat right across the top of the six and miss sort of the open man on top of the box. It's just kind of like a very obvious one, you know, and credit to Adrian Heath for sort of picking that one out and maybe seeing something that how far deep they do drop. But they did themselves no favors in this one, but still managed to come out with a draw, which is, I guess, good for me in a way. And I think also keeps them on pace, 4 points from to start a brutal road trip to start the season is like an excellent start to the season no matter what.
Yeah, against Seattle, Minnesota, two teams that are going to be in that contender status in the West. San Jose, 3, Columbus, 3, Francisco Calvo and Mateus Almeida. Like, I was thinking about this. It's like, you know, Tinder has played a big role in my life and pairing me with the right person. I just feel like Francisco Calvo and Mateus Almeida were like, they super liked each other. And they were like, yes, like, where it's meant to be. We were always supposed to be together. I could just tell. Down 3-1, down a man. Here come the Earthquakes with two set piece goals from Francisco Calvo, and Caleb Porter's got to be absolutely losing his mind to lose in this. Or, well, it felt like a loss to draw in this manner. when you're up 3-1, Lucas Alarion, he's very good. He's among the best all time, I think, in MLS at free kicks already at this point. But again, Columbus got to look back at this one and be like, man, we just frittered away 2 points in the last 15, 20 minutes of this game because we didn't take San Jose seriously. Montreal, Philadelphia, Dave, that's you. Philly with the road win, 2-1.
Yeah, I thought Philly looked more comfortable than week one. Those two center forwards sort of being battering rams for Gazdag and Bedoya and Flock to sort of follow in and pick up chances and create opportunities and finish in this game has been fun to watch, and I think will work really well for them. Your hope now is with Mikel Ure coming on late in this one after he finally got to the U.S., he brings a little bit more quality to that front line than what Sergio Santos is giving you, which is a lot of effort and running, but not as much of that finishing. And then you are able to be more potent and more dangerous, but otherwise really good result. I thought Montreal started well, weren't able to sustain it, but you also have to think they have half an eye on this week. And so in terms of pushing and not pushing and no Kyoto in this one because of the red card, so you're already like fourth string at center forward. I think that plays into it, but credit to Philly for taking advantage. And shout out to Nathan Harriel, who I thought struggled at times, but I'm really high on him. I like him a lot for a future national team potentially. And he got to start it right back in this one.
KC 1, Dynamo 0. They'll take it at home.
Yeah. I mean, the Dynamo went out there for a 1-0 loss with that lineup, and they got exactly what they were playing for. And I think Peter Vermes is probably pretty happy with that.
Yeah,
the Dynamo are unwatchable through two games, man. It's just let's just move on.
All right, we're moving on. Chicago Fire 0, Orlando City 0. Orlando fans are very upset about the goal that was taken off the board from Junior Urso, David Goss's boy. But I agree with him. It's hard to complain and say that the referees ruined the game when you had 0.2 XG throughout the rest of it. This was not exactly a barn burner here. The Fire have not yet figured out how to get the most out of Shaqiri, despite the fact that he has 9 key passes so far, tied for second in MLS. Just don't think they just don't have the quality up top. They don't have the relationships yet.
I think they figured out. I think they think it's Jairo Torres. So it's everyone turn your alarm on for May 1st and then wake me up when he gets here.
Yeah, Orlando have some work to do in the final third as well. Not exactly flowing in Vancouver. NYCFC couldn't get it done there either. Scoreless, 0-0. Keaton Park's back with his first start since the blood clot that had him out since last year around playoff time. So nice to see that. CCL time this week. Tuesday, you've got NYCFC hosting Comunicaciones, and then leg 2 is in Guatemala City. And then Seattle are going to host León, which is what Doyle was talking about. Hey, you got to win your home games in this competition to have a chance, especially against Liga MX opponents. On Wednesday, New England hosts Pumas, their debut in CCL, because, of course, the round of 16 got canceled for them. And then Cruz Azul is going to host Montreal at Azteca. And word is there will not be any fans in the stands for that one after everything that's happened in Mexico over the weekend. All right. How many are getting through? That's always the golden question here. You want to put their reputation, their name?
Last round, I said here? All five, and I thought the bold call was about Montreal, and it was about Colorado. And so I'm still reeling a little bit from that one.
Yeah, but 4 out of 5 is still pretty good.
It was very good.
This is MLS and CCL, after all. We'll take 4 out of 5. Could I convince you to go for 2 out of 4? Anybody jump on that bandwagon? We'll say NYCFC.
I'm saying three or four.
So yeah. Who's? How about this? This is a question. Who's not getting through then?
I'm going to say Montreal to go on the road first leg. And I like a lot of what I'm seeing. I love what I'm seeing from Georgie, even with that goal called back, which was soft. He's playing like a man. He's playing possessed. He's dominating. He's physical. Again, it doesn't feel like they have the depth right now to change a game. And that's been the problem in CCL is when you go to the bench, Cruz Azul is going to bring in players who can change the game, who can give them an extra boost. Right now, Montreal is just thin in central midfield, at wing back, as well as at forward. So I hate myself for doing this because I picked them last round to get through. But if I had to pick one of the three, it's them. My second concern is Seattle, but we'll do that.
3 or 4. Anybody going to change that one? Go fewer?
I'll say one.
I can't imagine anybody go one.
I think only NYCFC get through.
Veteran move from Doyle.
That is a veteran move.
I'll split the difference. I'll take 2. NYCFC, and then I don't know. Seattle is concerning me right now, but I also feel like in a tournament setting, they seem to click on. And so I feel like between them and New England, I'll sort of hedge my bets that one of them is going to get through.
So, Kalen, do you think Seattle could win this series without Rui Diaz, or does he need to play?
I don't know. I think they can. I would be interested to see who they go with. I feel like Montero would be my pick as far as to step in for him. But yeah, he is definitely a big loss.
I'm going 2 of 4 as well. I'm gonna sit here with Kalen. A little bit on the hopeful side, a little bit on the pessimism side, but Tuesday and Wednesday, we'll talk about this more on Thursday to break down the action. Let's get into the mailbag, 401-206-0MLS, extratime at MLSsoccer.com, or at extratime on Twitter. We check them all. Let's just go. I want to do it. I know Doyle is not the fan of it, but you know, you got to get yourself down on paper here, Doyle. I got a long list for the next 5 rounds of the Golden Boot Draft.
We're doing 5 more rounds?
Yeah, if we can fit it. You need 5 rounds. What are you saying? We're doing 5 more? You desperately need five more.
Pick a guy who starts.
Yeah, there is wild slander out on Twitter about these Golden Boot races and how my team's the worst. And then I come on here and look, and Kalen's number one pick has not played yet this season. His third pick has not played. His fourth pick is not a starter. And his fifth pick will probably not be in this league by the end of this year. Doyle's top 2 picks.
For drafting Rui Diaz? Are you crazy?
I'm just saying, I'm not the only one out here. Doyle's top pick probably won't play again in MLS. And his second pick is on the way out the door. His fourth pick is Julian Carranza. You guys are all in the mud. This is ridiculous that I'm the only one getting heat. Like, our teams are different. Weavey picked Higuain. Weavey picked Gonzalo Higuain for his Golden Boot team. And now he's out here talking about assists.
Pick
Cincinnati.
Come on. He's the Bobby Warshaw, you know, body language all-star, Gonzalo Higuain. Give him his full title, all right? Give him the full title here.
So I'm the only one getting grief.
I've got Chicharito. I got 1 goal so far. Could have had a couple of others against Charlotte. Just didn't work out. Gustavo Bow, it's going to come. Still waiting for the explosion here. Higuain, Johnny Russell, and Demir Krylock. Kalen has 2 goals so far. Rui Diaz, Mukhtar, White, Ola Kamara. Oh, man, PK is just really working for you. And Adam Buxa. Dave with Joseph Martinez, Jossie's artist, got him a goal. Io, Mason Toy, Jordan Morris. Then Doyle has Carlos Vela, Tati, Chicho, Carranza, and Abobasi. And first pick in the next round goes to Doyle. So who you got, man?
Lucas Zelarayan.
Oh, that's a really good pick that was on my top list here. Had 2 goals this weekend. All right. Dave, you're up.
I didn't make a list, so I'm pulling from perfect. Nothing right now because I didn't really realize we were going to do this.
I thought I wasn't going to get to it, huh?
I never would have dreamed.
To see the method behind the mat, you know, what happens. Yeah.
I'll go Luis Amarilla.
Okay.
I don't even know who's available. At least I didn't pick Cavallini. I'm just glad I didn't pick Cavallini.
Well, you should have picked up Calvo, man. You got a sign of things to come.
Yeah, true.
Kaelin, who you got?
I'm going to take Yimi Chara.
Okay. Jimmy Chara goes to Kaelin Carr. You've fallen in love with the bicycles / overhead kicks here. I am going to jump in here and get Sebastian Driussi.
You can tell Weeby's prepped.
Yeah, I have prepped.
I've been prepped.
Weeby's drooling over Austin FC players.
Absolutely am. All right, it's back to me. So it circles back around. Let's see. I'm gonna go Shawi. I'm gonna take both sides of the Sporting
Kansas
City.
That's who I was gonna take.
Yeah, I just feel like he's dropped way too far, and the goals are gonna come for one of those.
He's getting chances. He just
is. Yes, he got a ton of chances against Houston, just didn't finish. Kaelin, it's back to you on the snake.
Okay, I'm gonna go.
Chofis is on the board. I know how much you really enjoy watching San Jose. That could be sort of a.
Somebody took Krylak already, right?
Yep, I got Krylak. Yep.
All right, good pick. I'm gonna go with CJ Sapong.
Oh damn, that was the next guy.
Solid pick.
That's a good pick. That's a solid pick. You can go get your, you know, Ake Loba's available.
Yeah,
you're up. The second year bounce. Ake Loba's available.
I'll take Patrick Klamala. Even though he's going to end with 14 assists and 8 goals, but whatever.
I got two back-to-backs for you.
I'll take Michael Estrada because I think he's going to start.
Nice.
Yeah, okay.
And hold as I think through this.
I mean, there's always the Bruce Arena Super Draft Pass available to you.
Right, I'm not quite there yet.
If you feel confident about your...
Wow. I guess I'll pick Michael Ura.
Oh, man.
Oh man!
I'm out to see him. Looking at all the teams, say,
that's a definite sign of a guy that has no idea who he's making with the next pick.
Am I up?
Yeah, you're up, man.
So I could go Miguel Barry and hedge my bets on the Giassi Zardes pick, but that feels like a soft move.
It does. So you could hedge on Amaria and go, who knew?
I don't think Hunu's getting minutes on that team. It seems to be tough.
Pretty sure.
I'm going to take Shaqiri. Did someone take Shaqiri?
No. Shaqiri's available to you.
Yeah, I'm trying to rack up the assists category in this golden boot race. So
you and me can go head to head with him and Gonzalo Higuain. Whoever gets more assists there is going to go through. So Kaelin, you're up.
Oh boy. All right. We're getting deep here. All right, I'm gonna take what the move that I have one more pick after this, right?
Correct.
You have nine more.
No, you have two more. So many rounds. If we go 5 rounds, we'll see. Okay. We might end up for 4 here.
I'm gonna take. Sorry, last bit of research, guys. I'll take Miguel Berry.
Okay, Miguel Berry jumped in here. All right, I'm going to go. I know that we're a little doubt. We're saying, hey, false nine, who knows? But Jesus Ferreira, going to get in here and take Jesus and hope that works out for me in the final third. I'm going to say Tyus Magno. I just like watching him play, so I'm going to root for him here. It's back to you, Kaelin. We'll end after this round. I can see Doyle's just, he's so locked in.
Wait, is Reynoso picked?
Reynoso is not picked.
Okay, I'll take Reynoso.
Reynoso's off the board. Dave, this is you. These are the final two picks.
I'd like to go one more round.
Okay, fine. Yeah. That's fine. He's got a name. He's ready. Now, once he's prepped, he's good to go.
So, stealing that from all of you, I think I'm going to take Robin Lutt.
Mm.
He's finally on the right side where he scores all his goals for a full season. I'm going for it.
All right. Robin Ludd, Doyle back-to-backs here to finish your golden boot draft off. We're only going to have 50 players chosen in this.
I'm going to take Lewis Morgan because he's already got 3 goals and he's yet to play Cincinnati or Miami, which seems like a bumper crop on the back end there. Right there. Sorry, man, we're just like 30 names deep here. This is ridiculous.
We're approaching Walker Zimmerman territory of like who takes Walker from the set pieces.
Mamadou Fall's not a bad pick at this
point. I mean, goals per 90 for him is pretty solid.
Yeah, I'll go Kasper Schabilko.
All right, betting on to bring it back. Okay, Dave, your final pick is right here.
Okay, I'm between 2 number 10s who I think will get goals.
And this is not a golden boot draft. This is just a total goals draft, right?
Like, yeah, correct.
I approached the first iteration of this as like you're just trying to pick the guy who wins the golden boot.
Well, yeah, I mean, though, your first 3 rounds should be that way, right?
And like, now it's just
volume.
You're just trying to get,
trying to rack up some guarantees here.
I am going to go with Gazdag.
Wait, I want to pass on Schabilko. Get him off back on the board.
You can't do that. That's not the way this works. It's all right, you know, Todd Durbin's got the piece of paper. It's already been verified. Like stamp is on that thing. Like it's been chosen.
Schabilko already gave a speech where he said, "I hate all the haters. You shouldn't have passed on me, and then he'll never play a game for you."
You ready for it?
I'm ready.
Insigne.
No, I thought I was going to snatch that with the 50th pick.
Just so you know, Insigne has 1 goal from open play this year. One goal.
It doesn't matter. We don't need open play. I need someone to go down in the box.
Well, if I was going to pick with my heart here, to pick 50, the final pick, I would go Pato, but I'm not picking with my heart. I'm between Nijgoda, Urquhart, Romelu, Kyoto, and Dairon. I'm gonna take Romelu. I'm gonna take Romelu Kyoto. That's it. That's the official golden boot draft. We'll put it back out.
Anders,
we'll have fun with this one all year.
Anders is losing his mind in the chat because none of us picked Calvo.
This is just an all-caps waterfall from Anders.
So we each should have had to pick a defender, right? So
yeah.
One more round where we each have to pick a defender.
Next Monday, be prepared. Anything you want us to talk about in week 3, hit us up. You know how to get at us. Hope you enjoyed the weekend, everybody. CCL to come midweek. We'll be back on Thursday with Charlie Davies. Enjoy your week. Adios.